A lot of people still have zero control, and they end up doing ridiculous things. So we might as well talk about that. When are you in London, Van? When are you in London?
I arrive on the 22nd of June. I'm looking forward to it.
Right. And when are we catching up again? When did we arrange for that?
It was Wednesday. That was the day I arrived. Wednesday, 22nd on the day, of June.
All right. So, folks, listen, if you're in London and you want to catch up with Vanessa Rath, 22nd of June, that is the day to do it. Definitely, I will be there because me and Vanessa are going to be standing up in a bar someplace. But you are now formally invited, so block that out in your calendar. This is a rare opportunity to see one of the greats in London. So
awesome! I'm so looking forward to it. I hope summer arrives before I get there.
I'm hoping too. I mean, it's kind of just glimpsing through right now. It's not brilliant. It's kind of like very cloudy still. Hay fever's. We get the hay fever. So right now, my hay fever is appalling.
Really, really bad.
A lot
of people I've been training have been doing the whole sniffle thing.
Well, I mean, these days, I'm suffering. I really am. Like, waking up, it's like you got to take three showers a day just to wash pollen out of your face. It's really quite difficult. And I'll be sneezing throughout all of this, by the way, folks. So I hope you're ready for that. Anyway, we're live, everyone. We're live on Brain Food, live on air, bringing it to you every Friday, as we always do. We've got a fantastic show today. This is actually one of the topics I wanted to do for a very long time, but I haven't found the opportunity to do it until I saw a post from Teresa a couple of weeks ago, and she had announced actually she'd done this. And it was one of those where I thought, this is a great case study. Let's make sure it happens. It is how to organize a sourcing jam. So theory is, if you're struggling to hire a certain category of people, one of the ways in which you could rapidly do some talent pipelining is to get the department to help you do it. How do you organize that? How do you mobilize those resources? How do you get non-recruiters to help you to recruit? That's what we're going to talk about today. So
sounds amazing.
It's going to be it's going to be amazing. If you're a recruiter of a source or any type, you need to be on the show. Make sure you spread the word, by the way. We're going to be talking about this for the next hour. But anyway, before we kick off, just want to do some housekeeping. Want to make sure audio and video is all okay. So just the folks on Crowdcast, if you can hear me okay, just let me know in the chat stream, but the audio is fine. We should be blasting this out on LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn Live, by the way, and you can hear me on there, just give me a thumbs up. Let me know that's okay. We should be out on Twitter and Facebook as well. Twitter, but amazingly, you're starting to get loads of views now. I'm quite surprised, but
really?
There's people watching Twitter. More so than Facebook. I'm surprised. I mean, Facebook's totally neglected now, even though I still pump it in there. But I don't think people see it unless I directly invite them to the thing. Whereas Twitter, I think basically people see the stream, they see some video on there and they click on it. Yeah. So it's all good.
I do. I must admit, that's the way that I always see that you're on. So
you watch it on Twitter, yeah?
Yeah. But the Twitter algorithm likes you and I. It definitely pushes your posts into my view, which is great because then I don't miss what you have to say.
That's what we've got to do, folks. If you're watching this on Twitter now, just randomly retweet something or give me a heckle. Yep. Do whatever. It doesn't matter. Give me some hate if you want. It's all good because it all feeds into the mighty algorithm. That's all we care about. Let's give our thanks to our sponsors this week. We always have to thank our sponsors, folks, because basically, essentially, these shows can't happen without the support of our amazing sponsors. So please do check them out if you have a moment. Today's sponsor is Brick. Brick have been one of those organizations that are featured on Brain Food. The founders have been on there. They've been great. They are basically a talent intelligence platform that helps you basically make assessments without bias. So they've got a very sophisticated way of understanding what the strengths of this person are and what you as a recruiter need to kind of look out for in terms of your own bias when you're interviewing them going forward. So they're a very well-renowned and established business now. So I just want to share their link in the chat stream there. Brick as BRYQ.com. So check them out if you need some sort of assessment help. They're a business you should totally have a look at. Let's get on with it. Firstly, cool. Welcome to Vanessa Rath. Vanessa, how are you doing?
Good to be here. I'm awesome. And Hung Lee, I'm sure a lot of people joined me in wishing you a very happy birthday for this week. Hope it was awesome.
Thank you very much, and thank you everyone for your kind wishes. By the way, it was really excellent. I'm going to actually do a short video to thank everyone for this, because there's loads of people have actually met. I'm going to go individually, but probably I should say something publicly as well. So thank you, everyone. I'm a skeptic when it comes to birthdays. Like, I stop celebrating.
You're very secretive. I wouldn't say skeptic. I'd say you're quite secretive around birthdays.
I'm an open book. I just think they're quite embarrassing. But birthdays are quite embarrassing, right? Because obviously I don't mind being on platform. Like, I do podcasts and live streams and stuff. So that's all good.
Never your age, hung. That's the thing. That's what we don't know. This is one of the world's great unanswered questions.
It is. I believe there's some money riding on the right answer there. So I don't want to disclose it in case I cost somebody some money. Yeah. Somebody's just going to have to figure it out. Anyway, so thank you for your best wishes. But going on to this, I think everyone knows who you are, Van, but maybe some people out there don't. So do you want to quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Cool. So first of all, great to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Vanessa Roth. I'm based in Johannesburg in South Africa, and I'm a global talent sourcing trainer. So I spend my days training people how to find candidates that nobody else can find. I also work as a freelance sourcer myself, and I generally just have a whole lot of fun doing it because I love what I do. So thanks for having me, hon.
No worries. And Vanessa, by the way, you need to follow this lady. She is not only a great sourcer, also a great practitioner, great trainer, but she's, as you say, Van, you're still doing it. So I think your kind of currency in terms of technique is very, very close. You got a lot of like trainers that are great, but maybe they've stopped actually doing the job. I don't believe you can either, but some people have generally just been training. And if you don't practice, you end up just becoming more and more abstract.
But the problem is I always find myself like updating my training with new stuff that I find, you know, because it's such an interesting world out there. We're always finding something new.
Well, as well, the systems change as well. I mean, Irina is very good at this, where, you know, a Google will change what operators work, or LinkedIn will change what operators work.
Absolutely.
And you know, those things will, what was useful 6 months ago might actually be wrong information now. So it is very important just to stay connected. Anyway, I've shared Vanessa's link in the chat stream there. Make sure you connect with Vanessa. Okay, we always start with the same thing. Did you read the newsletter last week, Vanessa?
Of course, I read the newsletter. I actually read it twice. I read it on Sunday and I read it this afternoon because I just wanted to make sure that I was on top of things. So
my
favorite article, without a doubt, and it's going to be no surprise, was actually from Irina and Boolean Strings and Mark. I think that in anchor kind of addition into X-ray searching into LinkedIn was amazing. I could be biased, being very much sourcing focused, but I just thought it was an absolutely amazing article, something I hadn't thought about, and something that I really feel a lot of sources and recruiters could be doing better, but it was very sourcing focused. Let's talk about the.
I'm very interested in that. Can you dumb it down for the people that are not that au fait with Boolean, if you so to speak? Like, what was so interesting about this particular post?
So for me, what was so interesting is, first of all, loving Boolean. So Boolean is obviously the way we X-raying from search engines into platforms. This one was particularly around LinkedIn. And where most of us would go and search in title for someone's job title, we miss a lot of information. So for example, I would say in title software engineer, but then I would be missing people who in their headline would tell me that they're absolutely passionate about Python and Python makes their world go round. So I could now search for in title and in anchor, and in anchor would pick up the keywords that appear in people's headlines, not necessarily their job title. And that was just like,
Got it. So no one does this. Like everyone does in title. No one does this. It's basically understanding how Google operators work, and you can basically narrow down the focus of Google and instruct it to say, look for in this particular part of the website, look for things that call this, and it's an anchor operator. No one knew about it. So well done, Mike Santoro. Yeah,
exactly. And the headline's amazing because the headline, we got an extra 100 characters last year. People are really focusing on those headlines. They're making it really meaty. And it's a great way to find people from more of a generic job title into something that they're passionate about. And that for me is what actually makes us better sources of talent.
Yeah, you're going to find people basically that other recruiters ain't going to find using this technique. And for free.
All about. Push for free.
And it's free because it's basically X-ray. So check it out if you're a saucer. If you haven't, obviously, click on the link I've just shared there. Okay, give us another one that's interesting, then.
So there was actually quite a common theme, and I think it actually goes well with what's been happening this week and my fellow countrymen living in the US and announcing that everyone was going back to the office, Mr. Elon Musk. And there was a lot of... there was a few articles in there about, is this the end of work from home and companies calling people back into the office? But what I really enjoyed is one of the articles was how Airbnb did the opposite. And they said that anyone could continue to work from anywhere within the country. And their applications actually increased by like 800,000 applications in a week. I mean, it was bizarre. Where on the other hand, Elon Musk, again, talking about Tesla and SpaceX. I trained a company early this morning in California, and they say they've literally have spent the last 24 hours looking for CVs of people from Tesla and SpaceX and haven't had to look really hard at all because there's been a massive outcry about them being forced to go back into the office, which was kind of came completely out of left field.
I think, you know what, it's very interesting how companies do this. Because I think that, yes, you can maintain the position, we're going to be remote forever, remote anywhere, and you'll probably be very attractive as an employer against companies that are now making the decision, come back to the office. Especially if, let's say, Musk takes over Twitter. Have actually moved to a permanent remote anywhere, yes. Right? Yes. But if he then switches it back to, say, back in office, you can expect a significant attrition there.
Well, absolutely. I pinged a couple of my friends who were in the sourcing team at Twitter today, and I said, what does this mean for you guys? And everyone's been very quiet.
Yeah, it's basically, I think what we've got is we're in a situation where we're very used to the idea of work flexibility, we're very used to this concept. We definitely don't want to go back, but we can certainly see this tension because the bosses want us to go back. And it's going to be a big question mark as to who's getting this right or wrong. Obviously, you know, as a person that doesn't have a boss and is not an employee, I'm kind of observing it from the outside with, you know, I think fairly neutrally. Yeah. But I can see it from both sides, particularly if you have the conviction as a boss that actually it is essential to be back in office, then yeah, I can understand you making that decision. You know, the sooner you make it, probably the better. Okay, give us one more, Van.
I just want to make a note on that, is that we've got to listen. Well, I mean, we're in a scarce skill global skills crisis at the moment. We've got to listen to what the talents are saying. And most of the time when I'm getting contacted by people looking to change jobs, it's like, I won't consider anything but remote first. And I think that is what the workforce needs to pay attention to.
You know what? Okay. I think what bosses are thinking about, though, is that, you know what? If the world is going to kind of tip into a recessionary period, it could well be that the shoe is quickly going to be put onto the other foot. Bosses will have a stronger case to say, come back to the office or bust. I spoke to a friend of mine the other day, again, anecdata only, but you know what? That's the only data I care about is anecdotes, right? My friend basically was looking for work, and he actually said, yeah, the remote dream is over because every London-based employer he interviewed with said in the office. And he ended up saying, he said no to all of them, but the companies themselves were being more confident by saying, you know what, the remote dreamy period is over. We're going into recession, less growth, less opportunities for most people. The candidate market, as it was, is actually going to switch again back to employer side. And we're going to say, back to the office. So I'd love to know what your thoughts are, by the way, folks. If you think that if we go into a recession, for instance, does that mean the remote dream is over? By the way, we will be talking about recession-proofing your recruitment career next week. That's the topic of Brain Food Live next Friday. Okay, give us one more, Van.
Okay, so one more that I really enjoyed was, first of all, there's actually two more. I have to talk about two. The Crowdcast article was actually super, super interesting. I didn't realize what you could do on the Crowdcast platform, in all honesty. I see that a lot of people using it in different ways. And I just was amazed that you could, just keep people signing up, get it linking with your CRM, you know, push it to all of these platforms. So first of all, hats off to Crowdcast. I I think I've underrated you for a long time when I shouldn't have. It looked amazing. And then the other one that I want to talk about, Hung, which is completely out of character for me in all honesty, because I'm not techie, but I found your article about system design fascinating. So it was all about, you know, Uber's system design, what happens in the background when you actually go and request a ride, went onto Twitter, Spotify. And it's, I think it's one of those things that we just kind of take for granted. You know, we go onto Spotify, we have a look at the, we choose our music, there's an algorithm that suggests songs for us, and you just kind of take it for granted that it's going to be there. But the actual processes and those flow charts in the background were just incredible. I really geeked out on a lot of those.
It's actually really accessible. That post I've just shared in the link, by the way, it's quite technical, but it's really well written because someone who's non-techie can actually get into it. Yeah, I could understand. That was my measure, right? I'm quite low down. But the reason why this is important, folks, is because we obviously live in this algorithmically non-neutral world. You know, I think all of us now are aware that things that you're exposed to, this is not an objective or in any way a neutral kind of servicing what's going on. It's based on your behaviors and what this system thinks that you'd be most interested in. And this is generally true of all of the platforms that you're engaged in. YouTube, Netflix, Spotify, Twitter, LinkedIn even, all of those things. I mean, folks, if you're watching this on LinkedIn, chances are you have clicked on something that I posted at some point in the last 2 weeks or something. That's the reason why, you know, this has popped into your feed. So very useful for us to know how these things work if you didn't already. Because if you are a recruitment marketer or a content marketer, or you're someone who wants to get your message out further, could be as simple as trying to distribute a job further, you need to understand how these things work so that you can use them to your benefit. So check out that post. It's called, I've just shared it in the chat stream there. That's something worth reviewing. And by the way, the final thing on Crowdcast, I'm using Crowdcast, by the way, so there's a reason for that. It's because it's super simple to do a live stream, as we're doing now, but also to multi-stream it on like multiple channels. So I'm essentially going out on four different channels right now.
That's incredible.
It's really not a lot of work. I'm amazed more companies don't use it. Because in terms of its... what it can do, I think it's just better than most things. So yeah, get on it. Okay, let's get on with this the show. So Vanessa, before we bring our guests on, let's talk about the topic here. I mean, do you have any experience with organizing similar stuff or training people to do this? What's your level of experience with organizing a sourcing jam?
So we used to do sourcing jams at my previous, when I was employed, where I was employed in a tech company for 10 years, because as a recruiter or where I was working at the time, I didn't always get the tech. So I needed the techies to understand how they thought, how they would represent themselves on these different platforms, and making sure that I was ticking all of the boxes. So when I was writing a Boolean search string, what I was finding is that I wasn't getting enough results because I wasn't putting in enough variables, which I could only get from people who were actually in the industry, working in that space in the trenches. So they are brilliant. They work incredibly well. It's much easier from an internal kind of talent acquisition perspective. I think agency recruiters would maybe have a little bit of a challenge getting companies to share this IP with them. But it's definitely something that I would promote with your organization, but also within your recruitment team itself. Because I often find is that different people, different recruiters search differently. And if you can combine all of the methods together, you're going to get far better results. I mean, get out there. Sharing is caring. The big purple dinosaur told us.
You know what? That's actually a really good point that you make. I mean, you made two good points there, Vanessa. Firstly, like our ignorance of technology is actually there, because even though, however technically literate you might be, you're not going to have the depth of experience that the practitioners have. So even sitting next to a software engineer and have that person have a look at looking at profiles 100%. Will tell you how they judge. And the other thing that you mentioned that was really interesting was also you'd be interacting with other recruiters. And you're so right. Everyone's got their unique approach. And there's no, you know, one of the wonderful things about recruiting is that there's so many kind of paths to the same destination. And you can learn so much simply by sitting next to each other and working together in that way. So listen, let's get our guests on and have a chat with them. We'll get Joey on first. I think they're all making debuts today, so that's great stuff. I can't see Teresa, who actually inspired this this topic. So Teresa, if you're there, please do make yourself known. There is a Matthias. I assume that's Matthias Schmieser. I'm gonna just invite him. He should know better. I mean, use your second name, because if it's not you, like, I don't know. One of these days, a random Matthias is going to turn up. Anyway, let's hope for the best. Okay, so
there's
Turkins.
There we go. There's Teresa. There we go.
Let's invite her as well. Teresa, how am I supposed to know? You know, how am I supposed to know? Is that the right Matthias? I don't know.
Yes.
It is. Okay, so listen, whilst I find Teresa, can you firstly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, sure. Not a problem. Hi, everyone. Thanks for being here. Thanks for inviting me. Hi, Vanessa. And hi, Matthias. I'm Joey. I'm hybrid sourcer as well as the tech recruiter for a long time. Work in Netherlands and worked in different variety of software companies and outside the technical companies. So, Joey, what you see, what you get.
Good. Great. Nice to see you, Joey.
Great to have you on the show, Joey. Okay, Matthias, go ahead. Who are you?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Matthias. I'm a director of talent at Beamery. I have been in the game also for some years and enjoy my leadership track so far, but I also love to get into the weeds and into the details, and really happy to be here.
Great to have you, man. And there's Turkins. I'm sorry. But now I see your LinkedIn, and that's how you kind of call yourself. So that's totally cool. Who are you, Teresa? Can you quickly introduce yourself?
So Turkins here. I'm based on tech. A little bit about my background is, I've been extremely lucky to have the amazing opportunity to join the coolest VC-backed startups from Central Eastern Europe, such as ProjectBoard, DeepNote now, as an operator. So as a recruiter, head of people, head of talent, but also I got an opportunity to join the VC space. So I've been working with the founders from the Creed Up Ventures portfolio and helping to build the PeopleOps foundations, talent teams, and more. And right now I'm a head of people at DeepNote, which is Creed Up Ventures portfolio company.
Great stuff. Welcome, awesome. Everybody. So Teresa, let's go to you first, because you basically, as I mentioned, you're the one that inspired this topic, because I saw that you actually kind of documented your experience of organizing one of these things. So I wonder whether you could just take us through sort of the origins of this idea. Like, why was this an idea that emerged, and what exactly happened?
Yeah, so maybe a little bit disclaimer is that I'm by no means any expert in sourcing, like everyone in here. So I'm like a more generalist or builder. So I actually needed to delegate this to someone more experienced, some professionals. So, and I also I work in a startup, and I needed to fill my empty top of the funnel, because I was just like super busy with everything else, and I was the only person on the team, in a recruiting team, HR team. So I really needed some help, and I wanted to make like everyone aware of like what sourcing means and how they should be helping and they can help me. And also I wanted to hire my first recruiter, so I wanted to make like make this like an attractive event where I can actually bring these professionals, these like professional sourcers or recruiters, to help me with facilitating this event, and also make them fall in love with the company, because they would like they would see everyone super engaged in the sourcing, like our CTO, our founder, and everyone. So that could be great. And also I wanted to make the talent pool like more diverse. So that was like all these like motivations behind that.
That's great. And let me just, I mean, one of the first things that is worth underlining is that this is actually a piece of creativity that might emerge from a resource constraint. So in other words, you may not have the people to do the recruiting, so you have to do something creative, and you have to distribute the effort to non-recruiters to help you to do it. So, you know, you can imagine if I had 100 recruiters on tap, I'd never do this because I'd just like feed them the jobs. But in certain circumstances where you don't have this, most of the time we have less resources than is ideal. You have to do something creative, and that's like pushing it out to the departments and the people in order to get people active. And then of course you then mentioned a bunch of other things that kind of are hugely valuable motivations as well. But I think that's actually a really important one to bear in mind. So if you're resource constrained, have a think, this could be an option. Give us the how did you sell it, Teresa? It sounds to me like, hey, great idea, but it's also one of those that I can imagine just like not landing. You know, if you try to
how did you sell it? And I'm going to add to that is, how did you get buy-in from the departments and the hiring managers?
Exactly. Yeah, that's really, really, really good question, because actually I was at the first point I was really demotivated because I had one engineer coming to me and said, hey, I really don't want to train you because I don't want to cold call like anyone. Like, I'm like an engineer, an introvert, and I just don't want to, like, I don't want to be a recruiter. So I really had to manage the expectation. I don't want like anyone to do some cold calling because this is something I personally like super hate. So I just really wanted, like, the first point was to get some buy-in from the founders, which like they wanted us to be like fast in hiring and make a great brand from the company. So they were excited about that event, and they helped me to promote it. I also I had to hype everyone. So I had to like promote it and share like really hot lineup ahead. And that was like maybe like 2 weeks ahead, created a Slack channel and shared like this lineup and some updates and maybe some like Loom videos about like how it's gonna be looking like, and that I'm gonna invite actually some speakers to do the lightning talks about how to hack GitHub, about the Boolean search, about like how to use Gen, because at our company we have like so many people who are super excited about learning and they just want to like soak as much information as they can about any tools out there. So like after that event, I had actually our CTO like in the evening slacking me, sending me, pinging me on Slack that he's actually so excited about Gen, and he's in the evening teaching his fiance to use Gen because he was just like so impressed about like what is this tool. So that was like really hyping. If I go back to your question, sorry.
Let me just intercede at this point, Teresa. Thank you for that. So by the way, gem.com, go check it out. I think they're one of the sponsors of BrainFood, actually, good friends of ours. So they're a great type of, a very popular CRM type product. One of the things I think was super relevant that you mentioned was that you've got to actually tell people what recruiting is. Because engineers or whoever the candidate is, their experience of recruiting is very, very different from ours. They experience the cold calls, right? They experience the hard sell. So if you're asking them to do that, of course, they're going to be averse to this. They're going to think, I ain't doing this. I hate this experience. Mm-hmm. So you have to underline to them, you know what? Your expectation of recruiting is negative. Let's face it, we all know that because everyone's had the negative experience as a candidate. But it's a different experience if you are putting the recruiter hat on and doing the recruiting work. We're not asking for cold calls. We're not asking you to pitch the job. We're not asking you to do any of that stuff. So number one, we've got to kind of like kill that shibboleth, if that makes any sense. You know, you got to get rid of that monstrous feeling people might have. Actually, the engineer that came to you, Teresa, I think that's actually, I wonder how many people felt that way, but he was the only person that stepped forward. So he was actually a really valuable person to step forward and give that input, because I suspect a lot of people felt immediately, oh, you want me to recruit? What's all this about? Absolutely. So yeah, very, very interesting. And Matthias, I'm going to bring you in here because you've got some experience in doing this, don't you? I mean, I don't know whether you have this doing this at Beamery, but certainly back in the days with the other businesses that you've been involved in, I know for a fact you've done this. So what's your learnings, if you like, from organizing these types of events? Like, what are the things that you think, if you're going to do it again tomorrow, like what is the bullet point list of things that you say, yeah, this is the basic guidebook on how to do this?
Yeah, no, 100%. And first of all, to Teresa, I think it's a wonderful article. Like the moment where you dive into this and on scale, how you have done it, even not having a lot of experience shows that experience is not key, but it's the approach, the mindset, the attitude that will do just fine by executing things like that. Mm-hmm. But back to your question, Hung, I think one of the things that is definitely important is starting with the mindset by, you know, hiring is a team sport. You're not just as a recruiter alone. It can only work together. And then this is where you should start, facilitating this. And I think you did a wonderful job with opening up a Slack channel, but I would recommend people to talk to people first, right? To get a right idea of what is the purpose of all of this and why are we doing this and what is maybe something in for them to learn as a win. And I think from when I put in my whole talent acquisition hat, I would then also say, think about them as employer ambassadors, right? Employer brand ambassadors. And that's just the first step where you say it's a different need, but you need to get out there, right? Because we need to look, and in your article, it was very well phrased, this kind of leveraging all of our networks, right? Because in the end of the day, in a company, you have so many connections if you really just know how to leverage them well. So, and one of the things is also really make, and I think this is something that you mentioned, Hung, as well, is like making people comfortable in that environment, you know, creating an environment where everybody can speak up. When you have introverted people, remote sessions might be the best way to do that, right? Because they feel more comfortable. They don't need to go into an office or need to prep something. They just need their time on the internet. And you then tell them, hey, wait a minute, here's the spreadsheet. Here are the tools. It's not too complex. This is what I want from you. And what I also loved in the article, and I think that's really, really good in the way of, you know, sending out those messages and working on those messages. So and so many times we have seen we overcomplicate things. We want to put everything in one message and it needs to be like perfect, right? When you learn about how do you campaign people, how do you source people, how do you build this, you see a lot of times you have multiple touch points. Right. And these multiple touch points or, you know, finding those high caliber of talents and then understanding who reaches out first, because it's not all going to be the recruiter alone. Right. There will be other people reaching out as well. But how to do it right is then something that is very, very meaningful.
Let me step in and say a few things that I just want to kind of summarize at each point, because I hope someone's making notes, basically, because I ain't. someone should. So one of the things that, Teresa, you mentioned really important, actually sell it as an educational thing. Because if you've got like a bunch of people that would otherwise be working in their job or whatever their day to day, you can sell sort of half the day to say, actually, here's a learning thing. We're going to show you how this part of the business works. It's how we're going to recruit. Have a think about how that feels if you had marketing to say to you, hey, listen, we're going to show you how we market our business, and then they're going to teach you the tooling, give you the tech stack, have a look at that. As a recruiter, I'd kind of be interested in that. If I knew that, you know, you could step away from your work for 2 hours, 3 hours, or whatever it is to participate in this, that's great learning. So you can sell it as a learning thing, and also bring in like experts, maybe, folks from outside that can say, hey, this is not just John from the department, but it's actually, you know, Joey from outside. He's going to show us how this works. That suddenly switches people's attention a little bit more, because they know it's not just like someone who they see every day. So that was also a good point. And of course, getting buy-in from C-level, right? The senior managers, the pitch to them, I think, fairly straightforward. You're going to get faster and better doing this, more diverse, all of those things. Sell it to them first and have them make sure they're kind of ambiently putting the, I wouldn't say pressure, but let's say ambiently, or should we say, conspicuously endorsing the idea to the team. And that might help motivate them to get involved. Joey, I want to bring you involved here because I believe you're actually doing this right now. Or have you just done this? I mean, I remember you having a dialogue about this, and it may be a couple of weeks ago. You said, yeah, I want to try this. So what's happened? Have you tried it?
Yeah, I did. I did in the past and currently doing it as well. Different scales. Depends on where I am as well. Yes, we did it. It's what, which we used to call pair sourcing. Yep. You know, instead of jamming, and that is more fashion, it is better. We used to do that. I mean, the way I getting their attention to it, it's just like Matthias said, is about team, you know? Mm. And the hiring is all about working together. You know, we need to put all everybody together to make sure, you know, we can have technical way of looking at things, also behavioral. So this is where we come in together, we sit down, we arrange a kind of process. What we were doing is literally arranging the first round. First of all, we sit down, which department and which hub they need the most interesting candidates, such as API guys, is always we need API guys, such as mobile guys, we divided to iOS or Android, and we literally divide a team. And we put all the, generally I push for the interview panel people because they know what they're looking for exactly, and mm-hmm. they will know what kind of technology they will be reaching out to. So also I used some technical stuff on a Boolean and stuff. So took their attention on the process and they loved it because it's they feel they are valued, you know, their view and everything. So that gives us a kind of trust and we bond together as a team.
And hang on, Joey, let's stop you there. What do you mean they feel value? Can you explain to me? I don't quite understand like what you did to make them feel value. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Because it just seems like it's all the time they just go to interviews. They don't be informed of anything. You know, what's going on? Here we go. This is Joey's CV. He's great back end. Please just have an interview. They don't have any say in it, you know? And I just didn't want to cancel that. I just want them to feel that they need to put input on the profiles. And then they can look into it because they are the interview panel people. They will make a decision. And the next colleague, they will be working together. So that made so much difference. And the feedback was great. And we were doing quite a big scale of sourcing days, sourcing jamming days. It wasn't just all about that because we were also show. I was joining individual teams hourly rate. Base, and then we were doing, you know, cracking the GitHubs and looking people's repos and see the source coding, you know, the codes, and they loved it and they did want to involve more and more. That just give us a great result on the outcome. Plus, what helps me is also give us a conversion ratios as well. Slightly different subject, but I can explain later on as well on that one.
No, explain right away. What do you mean?
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. For the conversion ratios, do you reach out or do you get your engineers to reach out to the candidates?
Yeah, actually, this is a great question. Thank you, Vanessa. We do it right away. We do it right away. So what we do is when we do source, we select the people, say LinkedIn, okay? Yeah. We just select the profiles, like 20, 30 of them. We do it right away. And we write it down together. You know, can you add this? Can you add that? So we make it very simple, like Matthias mentioned that. We make it very personal and very simple. Not that long, you're the best, X, Y, Z.
TLDR.
Yeah. We don't use those kind of things. We literally straight to the point. This is our product. I think you guys could add value to our team, bottom line. And this, because we put them on a different kind of ratios in a different level, if they don't respond or they respond or reject. So that gives us a kind of percentage of ratios on the LinkedIn we normally do on the sit. And you can create a proper conversion ratios and you can see where we are missing. Is it a product? Is it advertisement? Is it me as a recruiter? Or is it really we don't reach out properly? You know, actually great data point for us to, you know, recheck our processes towards out there, the people we can reach out to, basically.
So does it make sense? What was the verdict? Like what works, Joey?
Well, I mean, working together, it works always. I love it. And, you know, I don't spend my time in HR. I spend my time in tech ops because I learn a lot. We sit down, we discuss things, we create market maps, and we see the market together. Not just like I'm telling them, I reckon you know, this Magellan that will present there and we can't get them in. No, we don't work like that. We just literally sit down, we look at the data, what we bring it in, and they involve in that data as well, creating it. And what happens is a great team believing in each other, and we also looking at things in a behaviorally, and they start to come and ask questions. So that is a great, you know, created environment to work in with your stakeholders, basically.
I would say one thing on this as well. It does. If you get this right, it can lead to a significant cultural change into the business about the attitude to recruiting. Because you know when you get things wrong, and I could easily pull out some examples of where things have gone wrong, right? Where essentially recruiters are blamed for failing to recruit, and then all of the business thinks you're an idiot, and you are a little bit because you fail to get them on side. What this does is basically create a bigger tent and get them involved, and they're actually inside the tent helping you rather than, you know, another sort of a thing on the outside giving you pressure. So this is, I think, you know, really helps businesses set into kind of create more of a recruiting capacity for the entire organization so that their attitude is improved going forward. Okay, let's have a look at some of the minutiae of this, right? So we're talking about this is a good idea, we're going to do it, et cetera, et cetera. How do we make sure people are motivated and involved? Do we allow people to opt out, for instance? I mean, is this a voluntary thing, or do we say, you know what, guys, let's all get together, everyone has to do it? You know, how do we deal with the situation where you might get a few like refuseniks in there? Anybody got any experience of that?
From my perspective, I literally leave it to everybody to make the decision, you know, never push anyone. But, you know, when you arrange the environment and the subject, we give it to them, and if they're available, it's just up to them to join it or not. But 9 out of 10, they do. So, again, it's come down to the explaining them what we do. Give them, like you said it earlier, Hung Lee, explain them what are we doing, what is our process, you know, why we're reaching out. So, and if you do that, they love to join you. So,
is it worth incentivizing people aside from the mission? I mean, is there? I will buy you a Mars bar if you do this. I mean, like, is there a way to encourage this, or would that kind of diminish the mission in some way? Any experience to share there?
I mean, you incentivize them in the sense that you create a comfortable scenario. You have maybe pizza, you have some food, some, you know, whatever. There are some learning opportunities there as well. So it's not for nothing for them. But I think in the end of the day, we always start with the people who have the biggest need, right? If they hire for their team, they are somehow incentivized to say, well, we are interested to hire great people, right, in that team. I think moving forward, it should become a habit or a pattern in the organization, or to that stage where you don't need that jam anymore, but people do it on their own. They're used to the system, they're constantly getting people into that community, and you just need to pick it up, right? Because you don't want them to be in this awkward scenario, maybe room, you know, breakout session, whatever it is. It should become a pattern. And back to the conversation, like, it should mature a hiring culture in an organization where they always are hiring. They never stop, right? And by the understanding, knowing the systems and what we are capable of delivering, then if they once understand it, they will do this on their own.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. That's a great Teresa, idea.
Give us an update on where we're at with this. So you rolled this out, you wrote the blog post and what have you. Have you repeated the experiment? What's the the long term impact of all of this? Now that you've done this, I assume it's a couple of months ago since this happened. So can you give us an update on where things stand with DeepNote now?
Mm-hmm. So it was really a successful session. Like I was not expecting that. Will get so popular, and I already like had so many requests to repeat that and actually like do it, like do a separate session like for each department and just like really like hype it again. And I just wanted to really like shout out to Matthews that it really depends like how you what is your team's motivation, what motivates your team, and then like you promote it like that way. You can like organize a crazy party You can make it, turn it into a competition if you have like a competitive like teams and you want to, or like you want to make it like more fun, or the educational event, and like you don't need to you shouldn't definitely like force anyone to do that. And then like as like status update for Deep Notes, you can see like if you do it this way, and if you like take it if you do it this way, then you have like your team coming back to and asking like to organize it again, and help them to do that again. We also like, so we closed actually two candidates, and we really built like a great pipeline of people that we started to build the relationships and like inviting them to our meetups, which is amazing. And what we also did was we started to create like reach out messages, because like I wanted again like to make our team to be more creative and like think about like what, how we should sell DeepNode, because there's no brand, like nobody really knows DeepNode because it's early stage startup, so there is like no brand reputation. So that really helped me to actually like, to craft the messages that we are now sending, or like the sequences that we are now sending. So that was really helpful as well.
Okay, so number one, fantastic to get those two hires in. I mean, if you were able to say that was the only outcome, that's probably worth it in of itself. Yeah. But let's not underestimate the talent pipeline or the talent pool that's been built as a result of all of this effort. Because suddenly, you know, all of these people are aware of the brand. All of these people are kind of connected in some way. They're going to be warmer candidates. They're going to be future hires at some point that you can kind of remarket to and keep kind of in that universe. So there's another way to sell it to C-level folks. You can say, you know what, we have immediate needs here, but guess what? We can predict these needs are going to be there in 6 months or 12 months. All this is still feeding into all of those spaces. Peggy, I'm not sure what you mean. Any examples to share? Can you explain a little bit more? By the way, folks, if you want to ask questions to the panel, please use the ask a question section at the bottom of the screen. Put your questions in there now. In fact, we'll be able to get to them towards the end of the show, which we're accelerating through to this point.
Hang on. Okay. Peggy, sorry, wanted examples of the reach out messages.
Really? Okay. Wow.
That's a bit of a bold question. I know the companies like to keep these close to their chests, but
I shared one in the Medium article, because we had like really one amazing team. They called themselves like Sourcing Mama, and they made it like in a rhyme, and it was really like perfect. Amazing.
So do you want to just I think I shared that into the chat stream already, but if you want to give it another shot and reshare that, folks, go ahead and have a look, because I think there are some templates there which you can look at. And Joey, you also mentioned fact there was your engineers were really direct, weren't they, in the sense that it was bottom line up front type messaging. It wasn't so much like a big pitch. It was, hey, we're recruiting, are you interested in having a chat? And that was it. And that may be sufficient. It may not just, you might not need to have like to be a complete wordsmith to be able to convert people if you're coming, especially from a peer-to-peer type of angle. I don't know whether that's true or I misheard you, Joey. Can you confirm sort of how those messages went out and how they were constructed?
Yeah, sure, definitely. I mean, there's two ways doing it. Some of my colleagues, they love to use emails. So they like to write it down in that and stuff. I personally like to connect first and, bring their my attention why I'm connecting. The reason is, and if they connect, again, come to the conversion ratios for me. And then when they connect, that gives me indication I'm 50% there. Then I can deep dive, explain who we are, what's our culture, what kind of tech stack we have. And then I just leave him the choice to make the decision, her or him, to make the decision to be able to get back to me. And that gives me it's not just about the, hey, you're great, join us. It's about, increasing your network, a little bit branding involved in it. And your connection, like you said, it's going to be your talent pool. Because emails are how I feel is... Some people make great success out of it. It's not a problem. To me, it's just so cold. There's nothing involved. But again, apologies to everybody. It's about personal choice. I'm not saying that it's not strategy to anything. This is my way of doing it. And doing this, I really have quite a high ratios of engaging with people. Might not be the, for example, Hung might not be there right now. You will be joining us. But eventually, oh yeah, I remember Joey has sent me the message. Let me just send it to him again. Yeah, I'm available, Joey. Is there anything? It just happens so many often, and that, you know, proves my point that it works for me. And I love the way I'm reaching out. And the wording is all about, it's about Joey. You know, I can't really give you an example. You should write it down. No, not really. I work with the really legend sources out there. They're giving us examples back in those days. And it was working at a certain level. But when I add my heart in it, it was totally different. It just the ratio increased like 20, 30% and 60%. Well, okay, it's all about me then, how I word it, how I engage it. So that also reflected body language and then conversation. And I think it's just all about your passion and your culture and your role.
100%.
Yeah.
All right. I want to say that the messaging style needs to be congruent with your personality. So in other words, if you have the templates might work if you have no personality. So folks, if you are personality free, use a template. Great. However, if you have some sort of personality and you've expressed that online somehow, you know, you're on LinkedIn, you're talking to people, you're doing stuff, then your messaging needs to be congruent with how that comes across. And that will get you a response with a certain population of people. Some people are going to ignore it. Some people are going to love it. Doesn't matter. Whoever it is that is always going to pay attention to you will pay that attention. You could adopt it this way.
I just want to touch on something, sorry, that Joey said that is just brilliant. I absolutely loved it. And Joey said, when he adds his heart to the message, and that for me is just so many recruiters don't do that. You put in your passion, you show that you're a human being, you're always going to get a response. And you're always going to make a friend to put into a talent community. So well done, Joey. Thanks for the reminder.
Thank you, man.
I agree with this. And one quick thing before we kind of ask the same question to Matthias and Teresa, it's also like not like being so desperate to ask for the close, right? I mean, if you're like straight away saying, hey, I'm recruiting, are you interested? I mean, it's kind of contradicting what I said earlier, but hey, you know, inconsistency is my thing. But the bottom line is, if you're trying to close too soon, the default answer is probably going to be no. The person's working. You've just approached them out of nowhere. It's too much too soon. So what you want to do is just do a connect, build up some sort of relationship, and then you can drop a conversation in with a bit of plausible deniability. And then, you know, give them the sort of the sense that they're okay to have a conversation without necessarily committing to your process. And then over time, you can educate them and you can work with them on that. And as you go through, okay. I want to go to Teresa and Matthias soon, but there's one thing I need to do right now before I forget. We always want to make sure that the conversation continues irrespective of whether we are still on air or not. We've only got 10 minutes left, so we're going to come off air soon. But if you're interested in this topic, please don't let Brain Food Live be the kind of bottleneck to stop you from learning from other people. Everyone else who's watching this right now is interested in this topic, how to organize a sourcing jam. So what we're going to try and do is to take a bit of time and just share your LinkedIn profile into the chat stream or into the comment thread, wherever you're watching this, and just connect with everyone else who is doing the same. This should mean you'll walk away from this conversation not only with loads of interesting sort of ideas and thoughts and examples, but you might also end up with, you know, half a dozen new people that are also very into this thing. And if you want to go ahead and speak to those people afterwards, and please do that, go ahead and do it. You know, keep the conversation going, keep connecting. So take a moment and share your LinkedIns into the chat stream there, folks, and make sure you avail yourself to these connections. Okay, what was I saying? I forget. Matthias and Teresa asked you the question, like, how do you structure the message? Is there a pattern? Joey saying, hey, listen, go with the heart. We totally respect that. But are there other options? Are there other techniques? Any thoughts on this? Matthias, go to you first.
I don't over-engineer it, right? I think in the end of the day, different things work for different people. Yeah. There are some tools out there that will help you course correct and identify what kind of personalities they might be and what they are high likely to pick up. But in the end of the day, I would say, I actually love the comment of saying connecting with people first. Yeah. And it reminded me, I think like 3 or 4 years ago, I just added a lot of people on LinkedIn that I wanted to hire without any, you know, a message. And I was surprised how many connections I got with no context. Right. And it's like, That's crazy, right? Because LinkedIn started like that, didn't it? Right? It suggested you people, and you know, you need to do that. So I think don't over-engineer it. Talk maybe a little bit about what are you looking for, what kind of role do you have, and if they're interested to pick this up. And in the best case, sometimes it helps if you have a call to action where people, if they are interested, might even schedule a call, right? But no pressure, right? Don't pressure them into that or say, hey, do you have time tomorrow? Yeah, or something like that.
At 1 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think what we are missing most of the time is that all the other people on LinkedIn don't use LinkedIn as often as we do, right? And therefore, sometimes we are just like, if people don't get back to us, that's just because they look in their LinkedIn once a week, right? And not every day or every hour.
Okay, a quick summary on the stuff that Matthias has said. By the way, Call Connect is being proven to be superior to message. So if you're going to connect to anybody on LinkedIn, just Call Connect and zero message. Oh, we've kicked him off. I didn't do that. But he's gone. That's fine. He's with us in spirit. Let's accept that. But Call Connect basically is superior. So I think Nicolas Darcis has recently done some research on that. Even Bill Bowman back in the day, this bitter experiment has been repeated over and over again. Basically, a Call Connect, I think from a psychological point of view, makes people feel as if there's no additional sell involved, right? They're just expanding network. So you can do that. Definitely your engineers can do it. Recruiters can do it with a little bit more. It's a little bit more difficult because the barriers are up, but it's superior than sending a message. And the second thing that you mentioned, Matthias, which is super important, but you know what? Your disappearing act just then has caused me to forget what that was. So it'll come back to me. Teresa, let's go to you. In terms of your messaging techniques, is there a thing that you like to do that maybe other people might be able to learn from?
I can actually share like two examples. One, when it went really bad, because I actually used too much of my excitement maybe and like too much of my creativity while reaching out to like Eastern European engineers, for example, I was like overexcited and I got some like negative feedback. So since that time, I actually learned, like, I got the feedback from people who I'm actually reaching out. They helped me to craft the message. So it was like without all the fluffy emojis and everything. And it really worked well. So before I'm actually now crafting any new message, I always get the feedback from for example, product managers or engineers on my team that's probably like the audience I'm reaching out to. And I also really like spend some time about like getting the sentiment about who is this person. Like, is this person like, I don't know, really like using emojis on their like GitHubs or like on their LinkedIns, and then I use that. Like I'm more excited, or if I'm, for example, hiring for my department, then I record Loom video. I'm like excited. I'm like sharing Notion pages. Like, this is what we are going to work on. But I know that like it wouldn't be attractive, for example, for some engineers on our team. But for the recruiters, it can be working really well.
Yeah. So the main takeaway here, folks, is if you're not sure, or even if you are sure, go and test it with your colleagues that might be able to verify at least you're on the right mark or what have you. I think this is actually essential to do if you are doing something slightly controversial or you're not sure on. So there may be, for instance, some incident happening in tech that you want to make a comment on and you think it's a good opener. That's great. But you know what? You want to try and validate that before you launch straight into it with, 100 message mail merge that goes out to too many people. Ouch. Like, definitely test this before you go scale. Okay, Matthias, actually, I remember what it was I was going to say, and Ed's actually corrected me, has actually preempted it, because it is about the amount of time people spend on LinkedIn compared to recruiters. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Recruiters are not normal people. We are not normal people. We are on LinkedIn all the time. This is abnormal behavior. I guarantee you there's how many people watching this on LinkedIn? I don't know, maybe 150 right now. I guarantee you like 149 are recruiters. And there's one bored dude who's like, for some reason, just happened to see this in his feed. So yes, recruiters are not normal. The average people, I think Irina's also had the same stat. It's monthly. Once a month, people sign in. And that obviously ramps up if they're looking for work, but most people have work and they forget about it. So don't be thinking that this is what people do. Okay, I want to go straight to questions because we're running out of time. First two are done. Okay. Danielle is asking, has this anyone done this outside of tech or engineering? Because this is a classic thing to do in tech, but I'd love to know whether anybody has tried this in sales or in marketing or in something else. Any answers, please?
I definitely did it in sales because the sales is the most difficult because salespeople are always selling to you, right? So I had to sit with the sales manager to say, how do you pick out when people are selling to you and selling you a story as opposed to being genuine? And it worked really, really well.
There we go. I think perfectly possible in other industries as well. If you have, it's probably not worth doing for a single role. I mean, I can't imagine, that this is worth doing for that one-off position. But if you have multiple roles, there's something of a department in your business, probably you could do it with that group of people that are already there. So answer is yes, Daniela, even though I think most people lean towards tech because that's the hardest or, one of has traditionally been the toughest one to go at. Okay, Amanda has a really interesting question. What if a candidate says no? So you've reached out to this person. Is it okay at that point to ask for a referral? Yes, no. Yeah. What are your thoughts? Let's go around. Matthias?
Yes.
You think it's okay? Joey, the person said no on this sourcing. Like a candidate said no. Do you ask for a referral straight away or not?
No, I don't ask straight away. No, because my intention to engage that person for a particular, I'm not going to do that. Can you also give me your friend's name? No, I don't do that. It's my job to investigate and find out his referrals.
Fair enough. Okay, how about you, Teresa? Would you do this?
I don't usually do that, but I have no problem to imagine I would ask. But I usually like tend to be like, I want to be useful or like give them something, not like just ask for.
Yeah, I don't think it can be too high demand. I think it's possible to do. You just got to be careful with it. And it may just be a case of keeping people in that talent pool because that's what you want to do. You want to try and make sure that's a future hire there or at least a future ally or at least not a future antagonist. Like let's keep the bar low. You want to make sure this person isn't an antagonist to your business. And the way to do that is just to be nice and to be friendly. Okay, folks, that's about it. It's been an amazing 1 hour. Clearly, we could do more time, but we're running out of time. And I want to make sure people go home and have a very good weekend. So we're going to say goodbye to our amazing guest today. Joey, thanks a lot for joining us. Great to have you on the show and for your debut on Brain Food Live. Thank you so much for coming and joining us today. Matthias, great to see you as well. Absolutely great to see you back on the show. We'll bring you back if you're up for it. And Teresa, thank you so much for writing the post, doing the thing and launching this entire sort of idea. I thought it was wonderful.
Thank you.
Please do let us know if the thing repeats and if there's anything else going on. I'm sure people will be very thrilled to hear more about it.
Thank you so much.
Great stuff. That was really good, wasn't it? What an interesting experiment. I mean, yeah, it's a no-brainer when you think about it. Oh crap, one thing I didn't ask and super important and I can't bring them back onto the screen, but how do you do this in remote? Like we talked about the in-person remote, there's got to be an implication. Maybe that's for chapter two, like because all of
what we're talking about. I think it could be done, but a few tweaks would have to be put into motion there. For me, the greatest takeaway from today is how you have to have buy-in from the whole department or the whole organization. So if you've got a CEO who's driving this agenda with you, you're going to be far more successful than just the recruiter who's come up with the idea. I think that's really important, is get the buy-in from the right stakeholders from the outset.
Yeah, I get the feeling the CEO is just going to say yes, because if you just say, I'm going to do this, I think that's an easy convert at CEO level, right? But I think the problems will come at senior leader, like the hiring manager, let's say, or the senior tech people that might, feel that recruiting is not what they do. Mm. Like, why am I doing this? I'm not getting paid.
But so, maybe if someone really senior has told them and not the recruiter, they might be more willing to
So you drop it in from the CEO, but then you can kind of do the education piece and then the reassurance piece to say, listen, we're not going to get you to necessarily message out. I will message out for you if you want, or even I can adopt your identity and do it for you, then you could do it that way. Because basically you want to say it's not extra work, but we need access to your knowledge. We need access to your network, because basically you're going to be more connected to people than others are. I mean, I'm massively connected to recruiters right now. So if someone's looking to recruit a recruiter, my network's probably going to be useful. Same thing for engineers, salespeople, whatever it is. It's the network value that they have. Okay, Van, listen, you've been great. Thank you so much for stepping in and being a co-host for us today.
It was brilliant. Is Adam celebrating the Jubilee?
He is. He's out and away. But also, I thought it would be useful to get you in for this because of the sourcing angle. Because sourcing is something I think is very specific. So great to have you back. I think you might be back again. Aren't you? Are you?
I'm actually on next week as a guest. I'm not quite sure how that worked out. So I'll be back next week, and then we'll catch up in person later this month. So
folks. If you enjoy the show, make sure you follow the channel. And by the way, we're talking about future-proofing your recruitment career. So it's going to be a coaching session, how you as an individual recruiter make sure that you are optimally positioned, irrespective of market conditions. I think you have to sign up to it, folks. Make sure you register. Okay, Vanessa, I will see you next week in this case. Have a good weekend.
Awesome. Have a good weekend. Cheers, my friend. Bye.
Wasn't that great, folks? What a wonderful show. And I didn't sneeze once during it. I'm going to do a lot of sneezing now, though, because it's bloody hell. Hay fever is really causing me problems. All right. That's about it. Thanks for watching, everybody. I will see you next week on Friday. We've got two Founders Focus next week, Tuesday, Wednesday. So make sure you follow those as well. We've got Stephen Anderson at Crouton and Virgil Rengard of Figures. They're all sharing their personal stories on entrepreneurship and leadership. So if you're interested in learning some leadership lessons from recruitment technology, folks, make sure you sign up to those as well. Okay, that's about it. Thanks for watching, everyone. Oh, Nazgul, I was in Berlin 2 weeks ago. Where were you? Anyway, I'll be back.